Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
You are what you eat, and you are what you eat, and you're even what you eat. Here's a clue, why don't you take a peek beneath your feet?
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. My name is Anne Stanley, and on this morning's show, I'm joined by Katie Payne. Katie is a writer, an artist, and a person pursuing a life of voluntary simplicity on Jarrah country. Katie is here today to talk about something called resilience, a clever word that means reskilling for, includes the ideas of reskilling and also resilience in the face of political, economic, social, and ecological collapse. Katie's podcast is called Resilience 2, and you can navigate to this via Katie's website. It's got a great list of guests, the who's who of permaculture, actually, people that have been on this show, people that will be on the show, I hope, later on. And it's got tantalizing topics like finding God in the compost and quitting your job and working in reciprocity. Katie, welcome to Local Food Connections.
Thank you so much for the beautiful introduction, and thanks for having me, Anne.
Looking forward to talking to you. I had a look at your website, and you talk about how your podcast was inspired by a Dave Pollard article that outlined 20 essential skills for adapting to civilizational collapse, and how you got curious about how to cultivate them. Mm-hmm. And you asked also whether whimsical, impractical types like yourself can find their niche in the apocalypse. So I went to the list, and hopefully we'll chat about some of those essential skills. But I want to start off with that second question about finding your niche. And the reason for that is I think that is the central question facing your generation. You're a generation, it's quite clear, that has been born without an obvious path. You know, you're not going into the factory, you're not going onto the farm, you're not going necessarily into university. So I'd love you to talk about that a little. Any angle at all on that you'd like to talk about?
That's such a rich topic. And yeah, I'm just feeling how it can be so easy to think that we don't have a place in this ecosystem, humans, I mean, and how cynical we can get about humans being just a purely destructive force in the world. And I know, coupled with what you say about, you know, our generation not having such a certain path laid out for us, especially in terms of, you know, economic pressures and this context that we're all living in, it can feel quite a challenge even to come home to the idea that every single one of us has a niche, has an ecological niche. When I look at the birds in my yard, they all seem to know what they're doing. they're cycling nutrients, they're eating, they're pooing, they're fertilizing, they're reproducing, they're dyeing, they're composting. And it strikes me that when we look outside, look to the natural world, it is obvious that everything has a place. And I deeply believe that humans have a place, and we have this incredible intelligence for a reason. And I mean, I seem to speak to a lot of permaculturalists and people interested in growing food and gardening, and it strikes me that maybe humans are these wise gardeners of the planet. So yeah, I've been someone who's sought advice in self-help books and really wondered what is my role in this world, especially when you're a creative person and not given that kind of financial or social feedback in a lot of cases that what you do is important. Mm-hmm. I've really had to redefine redefine what it means to have a niche and a role in this world.
Rethinking humans as, what did you say, as the gardeners of the world, or the intelligent gardeners of the world? That's a, what a lovely, lovely image. And also, we must have this intelligence for a reason. So, without putting you on the spot too much, what is the reason for that intelligence? Because, I mean, it's given us science, it's given us AI, it's given us industrialization and a lot of problematic things. Not that all of that's necessarily problematic. Certainly problematic now at this point in history. How else might we use that intelligence, do you think, for good?
It's a great question. I don't have an answer. I ask other people on the podcast all the time what their broad philosophies and perspectives on life are because I'm desperate to get to the bottom of things. And well, I suppose that in a way, the mystery of why we are so intelligent and what we're doing here perhaps is the thing that we need to get comfortable with or get used to holding. And perhaps trying to rationalize everything and trying to have answers rather than questions has led us towards this hyper kind of mechanized, quite disconnected world, disconnected from the great mysteries of life and the beauty and wonderment that I think keeps us quite humble in the scheme of things. So that's a bit of a cryptic and maybe unsatisfying answer to you, Anne, but that's how I feel. What does it mean to have more questions than solutions than concrete responses?
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. The idea of humility, because I think I was hinting at that before when I was talking about all these things are not necessarily intrinsically bad, but I think we have to have the humility. We're really lacking in humility. When you look at the President of the United States, for a start, that he could be elected because he's got so much hubris and so little humility, and it seems that we need a big dose of that.
And I think just to riff on your humility and that word that's surfacing in this conversation, and the root of that being the hummus, being the not hummus like the delicious snack, but the hummus, the soil, the loam, the seat, the foundation of everything, right? Like we come from there, we return to there, and being more in touch with the soil, seeing the world that's in the soil and seeing our impacts on that is one way to counter some of the hubris. I'm not sure what the roots of hubris are, but I think being a soil interested person does keep us grounded psychically and practically.
Totally. Symbolically as well.
Exactly.
All right. So let's get off the big questions here and get onto some of the hard skills. So I know you've spent some time working with David Holmgren and Sue Dennett at their place. Talk to me about what you've learned there about growing and harvesting food.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to that time, those 3 years that I spent at Meliodora, which is a world-renowned permaculture property. People come from all over to see what David and Sue have created there over decades and decades. And David being the co-originator of permaculture with Bill Mollison, it was such a privilege to be welcomed into their environment for those 3 years and still be part of their community. So what did I learn? I mean, it's kind of like anything where you can go so deep into an experience and learn about life, you know, learning together with other humans how to resolve conflict, how to negotiate goat duty, whose turn it is to water the garden. Like these kind of interpersonal skills are really big when it comes to living together in kind of an unconventional template in this day and age. You know, there's three households on that property, and I was in a tiny dwelling there. And so learning what it means to be part of an established property where I'm fitting into a culture. I'm not dictating the culture. I'm not bringing all of my own ideas to kind of recreate something. I'm, again, like this kind of humble participant, but also with autonomy and with something to say. So how do you navigate that tension between the hierarchy that exists, which is it's David and Sue's place, but being someone who is in exchange and reciprocity there, so feeling respected and valued, which I always did. And I think that is a great question for anyone looking at consolidating households or growing community, are there hierarchies? Is it kind of a horizontal structure? There's all of these soft skills that come out of that. And then I suppose hard skills, it's like milking goats, managing animals. What does it take to have healthy, happy goats and lots of milk so we can make yogurt and cheese and obtain a yield from those beasts? And those, I call them beasts because they are quite beastly. They're also lovely on certain days too. But I had to learn how to grab the bucket before the goat kicks it over. And that's like a ninja skill that I'd never had to cultivate before. How does a wood chipper work? So we're chipping lots of wood that was coming from all of the trees on the property so that we could make mulch. And there's just when you're looking at your needs, your basic human needs, and meeting those, for energy, for food, for connection, you start learning lots of things because we've outsourced lots of things. So growing food was a big part of life there. And it's quite, it's just really beautiful seeing someone like David, who has gardened and thought about growing and resilience his entire life, and looking at where he's gotten to after all of those decades. Like, what are his garden systems? Where has he returned to something that is more conventional because it just works? Or where is he more radical? So I think, it's just a, I so recommend seeing the property if anyone has the chance to. And personally, just being part of a living system like that, where, they don't go to the supermarket, it's just not part of their world. What does it take to live like that? I mean, I was just dunked in there, kind of steeped in that culture, which, has set a bit of a precedent in my life now.
So what niche did you fill there? So, I mean, I understand you, there was no monetary exchange, so I presume you would have done some work in return. So what work did you do and how was that for you?
I'm just thinking the niche that I filled. I mean, one of them was drawing really silly little pictures on the whiteboard of our on our to-do list to kind of bring a little bit of joy to the work that had to be done for the day, and just flagging that those kind of soft creative skills do matter in a system that is seriously, about growing food. So, I was the scribe and the doodler and maybe a bit of comic relief sometimes, I don't know. But more literally, I was working, I'm trying to remember now, I think 2 days on the property in exchange for the most gorgeous Japanese inspired tiny house and all of the food that I could eat from the garden and the goats and all of the eggs and stuff that we were producing there. And that included a couple of mornings on goat duty, so milking the goats, taking the goats down onto the commons in the morning to set them up in paddocks there because they're doing a lot of remediation work, eating blackberry and gorse in the common on the common land, and cutting fodder for the goats, and a lot of flexibility in terms of, part of the beauty of sharing a property is that you've got people around to step in when other people are busy or away or teaching a permaculture course. It's, I think it's quite essential to have that flexibility in those relationships. So sometimes I would be minding the property more if David and Sue were busy. It was essentially, I think it got to the point, especially after 3 years living there, of what needs to be done and how can we all pull together to do that. It wasn't so much a tit for tat. These are the strict boundaries, although boundaries are really clear and good and helpful in those arrangements. But it did just become this is our home and it's supporting us. So what do we need to do to support this this gorgeous permaculture property that is so abundant?
And Katie, did you get a sense of how much labor went into growing for producing food?
I mean, it's laborious. It's a gym. It's all of the functions that we've again outsourced, right, to keep us fit and able and active in those ways. But it's a lot of work. And when you look at it through the lens of now, how food is valued and what the dollar figure on that food would be, it doesn't, I don't think it makes sense economically to grow food. But when you take the boundary wider and look at the health benefits, all those benefits that you're getting for participating in that system, for the nutrients in the food, for the organicness of that food, that's where it becomes really enriched. And the sharing with your neighbours and the connections that that forges and the resilience that that grows in community. So there was so much work involved, and it was a whole life thing. If you're not growing food, you're preserving it, you're processing it, you're harvesting it, you're looking at it on your benchtop rotting, thinking, oh my God, like I
Oh,
need to make
yeah.
time to deal with those cucumbers or those beans or those tomatoes. And I really feel that's the way it should be. I mean, I don't know about anyone else, but most of what I think about is food. I'm a creature who wants to eat, and I think that starts the wheels turning of us connecting with place and being better custodians of place. So I definitely don't see the work involved in growing food as a negative thing, but I know that it's tricky because it doesn't match what people need financially to survive in the current paradigm. So that's, a big answer to your little question.
Yes, yeah, yep. And you talked before about the boundaries that are required in order, you talked about negotiating to what extent have we got a hierarchy, what are my obligations, etc. Are the boundaries there made explicit? Are there discussions about that, or is it more organic?
Well, I will say that it's been a couple of years since I've lived there, and I know that things evolve all of the time, and it's very responsive to the crew who are living there at any given time. So I can only speak to what we devised when I was a resident or a part of that family in that place. Yeah, it was a real combination of, I saw some documents around the intentions of Meliodora and what's expected and what that kind of agreement is. But then it's almost like you need that trellis, kind of like a plant growing up some structure that gives it something to hang on to. But then you can kind of go in different directions based on the day, how you're feeling, what the season is demanding of you, and those relationships, the subtleties in those relationships that, of course, happen. So I'm going to say it was a mixture of documents that you could refer back to and an ongoing conversation that included everybody without it becoming this cumbersome thing where you never got anything done because you were trying to make decisions.
Australia's energy market is broken.
Right, but co-power gives you better energy?
Nope, no retailer can control where the electrons they buy off the grid come from. But as a co-power member, you can vote on where 100% of revenue goes. So instead of corporate profit, your energy bill builds the world you want to be a part of.
That's cool.
Learn more about the solidarity economy and co-power today and take the power back.
Victorian Energy fact sheets and basic plan information documents are available at cooperativepower.org.au. For clear advice on the right plan for you, contact us on 03 9068 6036.
Tune in to Billabong Beats Tuesdays at 11 a.m. with me, Gavin Moore, giving a voice to both Western Kulin and Kulin First Nations peoples. Join me to talk about philosophy and dreamtime stories surrounding the waterhole, the sacred fire, the land, the plants and animals. Billabong Beats, 11 a.m. Tuesdays on 3CR.
This is the Local Food Connection show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. And you can go to the Local Food Connections page on that website and find all of our podcasts. Today I'm chatting with Katie Payne about some of the hard and soft skills we'll need to cultivate to find our niche in a simpler, more localized world. Did you find that fluidity of what happened on any given day meant that people could find a niche? So if you're someone who likes working with animals, then you do the goats, and then someone who enjoys hard labor can do the digging or whatever. Did you find that that's what happened?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I remember speaking with Brenna Quinlan, who is a beautiful permaculture artist, amongst other things. And she was at Meliodora before I was. And she graciously called me up to check in with me about moving there. And she said, it's really awesome if you can find something that you want to take ownership. And David and Sue will be really grateful for that because, in a way, it's efficient. It's efficient when we lean into our gifts and skills. And when you know someone is owning a space, whether that's the irrigation of the garden or the animal care, or you're the person who's amazing at making fig jam and you're the jam smith of the village. So I remember Brenna saying that to me, and I felt like David and Sue always provided the support if you wanted to springboard into more responsibility. And I know in their relationship too, they talk about the division of labor in the household, where Sue is very much the master of the kitchen and the domestic, and David is more roaming, you know, he's on the property and on the tools and outward facing with the public. And so there is something, but they also say if they need to step into each other's roles, they can kind of make it work. But I think there really is something to, again, as we circle back to the beginning of this conversation, tuning in with our deepest passions and inclinations and what that little thing is that lights us up. And maybe it doesn't feel like it's so relevant, again, in today's world that's very much about specialization or making a bunch of money. But when you start looking at living skills, I think and I hope that people would feel naturally some arising in what it is that they're really drawn to. I also love poultry, chickens. I literally dream about them. And so tending the chickens and making that system better and better and making them happier and happier is something I found really beautiful. So
have you got chickens at the moment?
Yeah, we do. We do. Mm-hmm.
See, that's so interesting. So you could be the chicken person, you know, that's great. And what about your artistic self? So, let's assume collapse, even if it's a slow motion collapse or something, but goodness knows what it's going to be. What might your niche be as a creative person?
Yeah, well, I feel like, again, it's easy for arty creative types to feel maybe they don't have a place in this world where hard skills are what's important. You know, do you know how to fix that bicycle? Do you know how to grow food? But I was having a conversation with a friend just the other day and questioning the time that I spend writing and drawing. Is this really what I should be doing with my time, with my precious hours, when there's food to be grown, when there's community to be built? And she said, Katie, I don't want to live in a world without art. If we get to this mythical other side, I'm just imagining now, imagine if there's no dancing or singing or paintings or, you know, all of the above. It really checked my bias towards the hard skills, which is our cultural bias towards those harder skills, and made me realize, well, when I think forward into this post-collapse or intra-collapse space, of course we need the arts. And that's leaving aside that we share stories and make meaning and create a culture which can be more or less regenerative for the world through the arts. These are like the Trojan horses that actually move people into action and touch our hearts. So my niche, and to answer your question, I suppose the podcast is one way of really trying to figure this out. And I know a lot of people, that question surfaces them. Surfaces for them? What am I here to do? And I still don't know, but the more that I speak with people on the podcast, the more questions that I ask, I feel like I'm getting closer to, am I a facilitator of conversation, a space holder, a person who can offer solidarity and warmth and connection and lots of different perspectives in a time when our focus is narrowing? And it's tricky because that sounds pretty flimsy, but I know it matters.
I think that doesn't sound flimsy at all. I don't think that sounds flimsy at all. That's the what did you talk about? That's the trellis up which the vine grows. And I think our world without art's inconceivable. And I don't think there's any community in the world that's ever been without art. You know.
Great.
So And thank God for it. I mean, so I don't think that does sound flimsy. And it's great to hear you say that, actually. And I think all artists think that anyway, even in the monetary corporate world we have now, the budget for the arts is very low. It's not easy to make a living as an artist in this society either. But thank God for the sacrifices that artists have always made in order to do what they have to do. Mm-hmm. We haven't got much time left, but I just want to refer to one of these hard skills down here, written here, is hunting as well. Hunting might be a hard skill. And I know your partner, Jordan, who was on the show last week, said that he was learning how to hunt. That's going to be that's very confronting idea, isn't it, for people who like to be at a good couple of arms length away from having to do anything like that. What's your take on that? I notice you've got a fur. Is that a real fur you've got behind you there?
Oh, well, yeah, speaking of, this is a fox fur that I tanned with a friend.
Wow.
We didn't kill this fox, but it died after being hit by a car, and the pelt was lovingly stored in the freezer actually by David Holmgren, ready for someone like me who wanted to learn how to tan. So I did do this a few years ago, and it's absolutely beautiful. And I hope that people don't find it morbid when they come into the home. It feels like a sacred thing to me and a reminder that I can learn things, and I can also celebrate the life of this fox as a pest species, as a feral species, or something that we don't want here in Australia by all reports. And, you know, there's so much to this pelt. It's a conversation starter. So in terms of hunting, and I'm just feeling really proud of my partner, Jordan, for leaning into that, because there's a lot to it. You know, it's no simple thing to learn about tracking, to learn the behaviours of animals, to understand even where they're going to be, let alone, you know, before you respectfully take the life of a creature. And my own personal journey with killing animals, with eating animals, is really long and winding. But I will just say that a skill that I've really consciously tried to develop is knowing how to take the life of small creatures like chickens, mm-hmm. and have been there as goats have been killed as well. And I think that feels important to me as someone who consumes meat, and it feels like a respectful and honourable skill to develop in myself, even though it feels also the most awful thing that I could be doing, because I love animals so much. So that's a really sensitive topic for people, mm-hmm. and I understand why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of moral issues all tied up there, but it really does, just looking at that pelt there, you really do feel connected to that fox.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with her.
Yeah, and even just looking at it now, I can imagine that you would every time you see it. So, and it would also keep you warm.
Yeah,
so if you... Soft. Yeah. So and it sort of harks back to that idea of getting back to the earth, mm-hmm. like we are animals of the earth.
Yeah. And I suppose when I take the life of a creature, there is no way I'm taking that for granted. And how much food we can eke out of one deer or one rooster is so much more than, I suppose, the disposable or rapid relationship we have with a bit of rectangular protein that we buy in plastic. So that's one beautiful outcome of interacting with your food in such a deep way. It's the appreciation for it and the frugality that you exercise around that. How many things can we make with this one, mm-hmm. with this one being? And how grateful can we feel for that?
Mm-hmm. Important permaculture principle, isn't it? Like not wasting, but finding multiple uses for things. Okay, that's the end of our chat, and it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Good luck with your podcast. Are you enjoying it?
Am I enjoying it?
Yeah.
It's terrifying and exhilarating, and an indication that I should keep going.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I hope you keep going. I'm looking forward to listening to more of them. They've got very intriguing titles and a lot of really good people on there. So well done with that.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR. And today we've been speaking with Katie Payne, artist, podcaster, writer, and pursuer of voluntary simplicity. Go to katie.com.au to find out all about her. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, you can become a 3CR subscriber. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American update. Bye for now. And thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much, Anne.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.